Welcome in to the OMR Podcast International, where we go inside the minds of the biggest names in the digital business and tech scene. I'm Scott Peterson, digital marketing editor at OMR and co-host of the pod. It's not every day that you feel you know the future. Something needs to be awfully compelling or persuasive to label it as the next big thing or story of the year, especially when the year's not even reached the halfway point yet. Today's episode, however, is one of those rare situations. We at OMR are confident that our guest today runs what will be looked back upon as the business story of the year in 2021. I'm talking about grocery delivery service Gorillas. Based in Berlin and launched in May of 2020, Gorillas raised $44 million in Series A funding this past December, and has since expanded its 10-minute delivery promise to other cities in Germany, as well as the Netherlands, London, and Paris. The genesis, however, lies in Europe's largest city, Istanbul, which is also the hometown of our guest today, Gorillas founder, Kaan Soemer. This week, OMR CEO Philip Westermeyer has the honors and gets Soemer's take on why the business has been so successful in such a short amount of time, how his childhood memories inspired the business model and its 10-minute delivery promise, and how he's managed to incorporate his life's biggest passions, bikes, consumer businesses, techno music, and water polo, into the ethos and mindset of the startup's culture. All of that and more. Right now, in the OMR podcast.
Buzz. Welcome to the OMR podcast. Kaan Soemer, founder of Gorillas.
Hey, Philip. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I mean, first question, obvious question. I mean, you've founded your company in Germany, but you're Turkish, right?
Yes. I'm coming from Turkey, Istanbul.
When did you come to Germany?
I mean, first time I came to Germany, I was quite young. I came to visit my aunt. She was a professor here. I was like 10 years old. That time, I just bought my first Game Boy, but essentially when I came the last time, it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I moved here and since then I'm living in Berlin.
And how come Berlin? How come Germany?
Yeah. So to be honest, I came to Berlin 6 or 7 years ago to build a venture. Yeah. And I applied to Rocket Internet and they didn't reply me. Then I applied to Rocket Internet again, didn't reply me. So 6 times I did this in 1 month. And then I said, okay, it's not going to work probably. And I wrote my Instagram, Istanbul, Berlin. At some point, I'm going to come back. And 6 years later, I said in my head, it was always like Berlin. I'm going to go to Berlin, build my venture. So now we're here. Yeah.
Okay. When you first came here, it wasn't for Gorillas. It was basically you wanted to like start something, but you didn't know exactly what.
To be honest, when you're living in Istanbul and when you make your way out, what you want to do is not the first choice. So you just first want to make your way. And after that, once you have the legal and admin stuff in place, then you shift to what you do. And this is exactly what I did. First, built a venture for Rocket Internet, B2B.
So finally they accepted you then?
Yes, exactly.
And in Istanbul, before you came here, you studied mechatronics, right? You're like an engineer by trade.
Exactly. I'm a mechatronics engineer. And I took significant time to shift from mechatronics to what I really want to do. Yeah.
When I talked to you before the podcast, I learned that you played like water polo on the national level. You were the captain of the Turkish national team, so you're like an athlete as well.
Yeah, like Philip, if as I told you also before the podcast, if you know 3 things about me, is one is I'm madly in love with bikes. And second, I'm in love with team sports. Yeah. And third thing is I love consumer businesses. So this is more or less, this is more or less like 3 things about me.
The bike love is so big that it's not only like Gorillas, obviously is a bike based business. You're like delivering by bike,
yeah.
But also like you rode your bike from Istanbul to China once.
This was one of the best things I've ever done in my life. But bike love is not only also the China trip, you know. I'm madly in love with bikes. When I came to Germany, I had 100 euros, 88 euros. First day, I bought a bike. I have a bike tattoo, you know, like I carry my bike all around, and bike love is something that kind of touched me across my life, and I think now that we changed this second biggest consumer spend on two wheels, it feels super special.
Okay, and I mean, so those three pillars of your life are also like included in Gorillaz, like obviously the bikes and I mean. You told me about like your warehouses warehouses are basically your locker rooms. You have like loud techno music in the warehouses.
Definitely. So one thing I enjoyed while playing water polo is the locker rooms. It's like in before the game, it's all about motivation. It's all about passion. It's all about commitment and the team. And after the game, it's more like celebration and very relaxed and sentimental feelings. So this is exactly what I see also in our warehouses. Now we have this decentralized warehouses. Everyone, you know, goes for the same goal, and I just love it. You know, I just love it. It's super special. You enter the warehouse, like techno music playing. There people are shouting like, "This is my order! Hey, give me my order! Didn't you put the banana inside?" You know, this. I mean, it's super super special environments, I would say.
How old are you today?
Today I'm 32.
32.
Yeah.
Okay. And you also like you fitted in like a couple of years of consulting, right? You worked as a consultant in Istanbul as well, right?
Yes. So, I mean, basically. Basically, I built my first venture, and after that, I said, okay, if I want to build a venture and, you know, raise some funds, this was my hypothesis by then, I need to have some reputation, some form of reputation, and especially if I want to do this in Europe. So I told myself, okay, Kaan, you know, like you either be an entrepreneur or do something that will take you to entrepreneurship. And at that moment, I realized consulting is a very good option to do this. And at that point, I jumped into Bain & Company. 3 politically correct years, I would say.
Politically correct years. Yeah. I mean, now that I see you and I know you, it seems like a strange fit. Like you at Bain, you must have had some trouble there.
Yeah, I mean, you should ask the partners. It was. To be honest, I'm someone who cannot be politically correct just because the environment is politically correct, and this this sometimes gave tough times to the team, but overall it was quite successful. So 3 years full of implementation. Yeah, I didn't do so many slides. that's why our pitch deck is not the fanciest one, but you know, just the pragmatic ones. First half I built with a great team one of the best loyalty programs globally, I would say, between a Turkish bank and between Turkish Airlines. So we built this credit card, the retail partnerships, the app. So it was great project with full of implementation and data. It was successful, so that Bain told me that, okay, Kaan, you know, like now you can do some entrepreneurial projects. And the rest, so second half, 1.5 years, it was all about moving from conglomerate to conglomerate and building small startups.
but then you came to Berlin, and you finally left Bain, and you came to Berlin. And did you already have this idea of Gorillaz with you? I mean, I know that's a Turkish. Mm-hmm. Version of Gorillaz. What's it called?
In my
Turkish, it's Getir. did you already carry that in your head, or like what brought you to finally found Gorillaz?
I mean, like multiple things come together for Gorillaz. So when I came to Berlin, I in my head, I knew that I was going to build a venture, but there were two ideas in my head, and one was Gorillaz, and what makes me want to build Gorillaz is basically three things. First, I'm in love with the service culture. Yeah. So what I mean by that is, imagine you go to a Turkish restaurant. Yeah, and you order a cigarette. First of all, they bring you the cigarette, but the most importantly, when you ask for it. You know, someone goes to the kiosk. They get the cigarette. They open the pack. They put on a nice plate, you know, they showcase you this this cigarette pack, and this is not only in this example, like in every part of the culture, there's service culture, and I quite like it. And this was something that I was seeking in each time that I was in Europe, especially Northern Europe and Western Europe.
So the service culture is not the same. Turkey has a much more service-oriented culture.
I think how people approach the service is a bit different. I mean, this has multiple reasons in my point of view. One might be very much in the culture itself. One might be, unfortunately, one might be income disparity. So there's a lot of
reasons. Why that's happening.
Why that's happening? But very, very importantly, like this service culture is something that I think is very beautiful. So this is one thing that I wanted to bring to to Europe or mature markets, I would say. And second thing is, as you told, there was comparable models in Turkey, not only Getir, but I mean, if you think about this. When I was a little kid, how we were doing our groceries, I tell you, my mom was opening the window, shouting, two breads, one, eggs and blah. And then the kiosk in front of us, they were just bringing the products. My mom was releasing one basket from the window. And it was 10 minutes. So this is actually how we reach our essential needs, was quite pragmatic and quite human. So this is like the fundamental of the service culture.
So let's try to understand how it started here. I mean, it's not a long time ago. It was like you came here 2019.
Yeah.
And then you worked for Rocket again for like only a couple of months, right?
In the
Global Food Group?
Yeah, B2B Food Group.
B2B Food Group, okay. Yeah. And then you finally decided, okay, you didn't have much money at the time. You were like basically broke.
Definitely. I'm still a bit broke.
But you must have made some money at Bain and at Rocket. They pay okay, right?
Yeah, to be honest, there's a Turkish saying, when it flows, you need to save. And I never had a feeling that it flows in. So, because if the moment, in my point of view, even if you're in a most well-paid job, you're still in a well-paid job and you don't really, I mean, you help creating the value, but you don't create financial value for your personal funds, in my point of view. So that's why I said I never wanted to save. I just want to invest in myself and my life and
So what was it like then? Like end of 2019, so a couple of months before Corona started, you decided to give it a try. I mean, and the story is apparently that you have started. I mean, the company wasn't called Gorillas at the time. It was called, what was it then? The first name?
I tell you the story, Philip. I tell you the story. So. I came to Germany with my wife, and first we were super happy that we're here, but then we realized that it's gonna take a while until we get the same standards in Turkey, and we were literally quite broke, I mean, constantly living in the minus, single income, so we were exploring how we can decrease our costs, And actually, two things happened. One is, you asked me the story, how I built Gorillas. This is the exact story. So one day we are coming from the grocery store, with my wife, and we are walking and we are thinking, oh man, we spent like so much money like this time. And how are we going to do this? How are we going to handle this? And meanwhile, I was thinking about this model, I need to build Gorillas. And while exact same time that we were thinking what to do next or how do we cut our expenses, never happened to me in my life. I never found money on the street. Never happened to me in my life. It was windy, and this 5 euro bill out of nowhere, it just stick to my leg and stayed there for, like 1 second or so. 1 second is actually quite a lot when something like this happens. And I'm a superstitious person, and I said, oh man, like, if this is not a sign, what's a sign? And I looked at my wife. I said, we now go to our place. We empty the living room. We build the shelves, get the products from Metro. And then I just do this. So we literally, with all, like, the moment we get inside of our house, I mean, she thought that I'm crazy. She still thinks that I'm crazy. And she has a point. She knows me very well. But I just begin from that moment on. I never stopped until then.
So you walked home, like, in a regular everyday situation. You found money on the street. You took this as a sign. Then you came back to your apartment and you created a warehouse in your apartment. And how did, like, then you built your first website, and how did you find your first customers?
Yeah. So of course, meanwhile, I said, I worked on that. So what I did is, while I'm building the shelves, you know, from OB, got the products from Metro, I called my friend from Poland, and I told him, man, there's something crazy. I have a crazy idea, and you need to support it. And it's gonna be big. And when it's gonna be big, you're gonna be happy that you helped me at the moment. He said, okay, what do you want? He's doing marketplaces. He's building marketplaces.
A software developer.
Yeah, software, but super, super basic marketplaces. And I told him, just give me one marketplace. Have a neutral design, you know, select one, and I'm going to change the domain. I'm going to change the product pictures. And after that, I'm going to use it for a while.
So he gave you like a pre-developed marketplace, like a software for that. And that was your first...
Exactly.
And so, what was the company called at the time?
Yeah, Get Goodies.
You had the name Get Goodies at the time.
Get Goodies.
And then you put all the supermarket products on this marketplace. And then how did you like get traffic on this?
So my wife helped me a lot on this one. So what I did is I prepared flyers, like flyer designs, and I posted them on A4 papers, you know, like four flyers on one A4 paper.
Yeah.
And I had 100, you know, of 25 pages. And then I cut them and I said, okay, now let's do this. You know, let's put them inside of the mailboxes. I mean,
and so you walked around the neighborhood and put them in the mailbox yourself.
Exactly, it's my apartment next door. The across the street. So it worked like a charm. You know, 400. You know, like, what's the conversion rate? 2% or so. I heard in food delivery when you flyer it. I mean, we had 10% conversion.
You had like four papers. You cut them out. So one paper gave you four flyers.
Exactly.
And how many flyers did you throw?
25.
250.
No, so in total, 100 flyers.
100 flyers. 100 flyers, and 10 replied to you and wanted to order food with you.
First of all, I didn't have a functioning website. I didn't have the checkout. So because I just cloned one thing and put my products there, I check people on Google Analytics, you know? Like, first they entered, they spent a little bit of time, they added products, and then They wanted to go check out. But I didn't have a checkout. So that's why some of them converted to cash payments. But many of them, I realized that they want to go to, you know, credit card payment and PayPal payment. So that's why I said, okay, this is going to convert.
Okay. And then you delivered them the food yourself, mm-hmm. and you bought the food at Rewe or at Metro?
So in the beginning, it was Metro. But then from left and right, I collected the goods. So how it happened is, in the beginning, I said, okay, what I'm gonna put inside of the store, yeah? And I said, okay, let me look at some products, you know, some other products, some online shops, and I have a feeling. When I looked at these other shops, I realized that, like, there are way too many things. And then I said, okay, like, I need to prioritize this thing. I got these categories. Yeah, and the subcategories. You know, what I mean by that is drinks. I didn't take drinks. I took soft drinks. I didn't even take soft drinks, but took, for example, energy drinks. Yeah, or like bio soft drinks. So I had like a list of 60 to 70 subcategories. I took this. And I went to the street. I found like 40, 45 people, and I made a WhatsApp group from these people. So there were like 10, 20 people that I know and 20 to 30 people that I don't know. I just met, you know, and I asked them, I told them, look, you know, we're going to do something special here and you're going to be the, like the history. You're going to be history for something. And some of them bought, some of them didn't buy. But I asked them essentially two questions. So first question is, from these subcategories, which one would you buy from Gorillaz? Buy then get goodies. Second question is, what would be your purchasing criteria? So how would you decide what to buy? Yeah. First answer, directly merged. Same people, all people wanted to buy same things, similar things, and all people didn't want to buy similar things. So this kind of gave me an understanding of which products I should list in the platform. The second question is a very interesting question. How would you buy things? Yeah, what would be your purchasing criteria? I mean, if you think about this, there are a couple of purchasing criteria. One might be price. You know, you want the cheapest one. One might be brand. You want a certain brand. One might be right size and packaging. So there was a consistent direction of the answers or consistent bucketing of these answers in these categories. What I mean by that, you want to buy a trash bag, yeah? If you go to a supermarket, you see tons of trash bags. Like it's like two, like one complete aisle, you know? Not aisle, shelf. Mm-hmm. But essentially, people want to have the right size. They don't care about the, you know, brand. They don't care about the color. What they care about is, I want 10 liter, 20 liter, 35 liter, 60 liter bag. And I want a bio option for this, you know, like a environmentally healthy option. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can actually have six products there, six SKUs there, and you can close it. You don't need a huge aisle. But when it comes to beer, then people begin saying, I want Heineken, I want a Brogia, I love my local beer shop. So there you see that you cannot only have the sizes, you need to have like different brands. So that's why we went wider.
But your market research was basically a WhatsApp group that you created from people on the street.
Yeah, yeah. I think I love those searches. So this is at Bain. We did many of them and it works. It works like a charm. And it's more personal. I love it.
And I mean, how did you like then turn this marketplace that you like got from your Polish friend into like the app that we know today? I mean, who built this? I mean, who gave you the first like help that technically? You're not a developer.
No, I didn't have a developer. But I met the best person. So it was quite lucky that I met him. So Ronnie Shibley, our current CTO, was building the exact same business in Lebanon. So while I was searching for our product partner, I took a deep breath and I searched for the exact same product. I mean, I didn't search for a marketplace. I didn't search for a prototype that can be customized. I searched for someone who I can communicate well with, or I understand myself. We have the same values, and they built the exact same business. So Ronnie, apparently, I didn't know him by then, but I heard that there's someone in Lebanon who's doing the exact same thing.
I mean, how did you find him? On LinkedIn, or how did you find him?
So basically, First, I found the company.
What's it called in Lebanon?
Knock Knock.
Knock Knock, yeah. Okay.
Then, second thing was to find who was behind it. And there, I realized that there's someone who's my second circle, knows him. So he was my third network. So, I reached Ralf, a common friend of ours, and basically, I reached him. And after that, we clicked from the very first day.
Then you convinced the guy from Lebanon. He lived in Beirut at the time.
Yeah. He was living in Beirut, and man, what like? First, we begin as you know, customer and partner. So like, we're doing, hey, I want this This is my design. I want to do it this way. I don't like this, you know, I cannot release this. But then I realized that, like, this guy is also crazy like me. He's like, we are talking at 1:32 to like in the night. He's waking up. He's going to a room and he's talking to me. And And we really, you know, sometimes we get heated, sometimes we celebrate, like it's full of emotions. And at that point, I decided to put alarm clock for every day at 6 o'clock.
In the morning?
No, in the evening. In the evening. And at 6 o'clock for 3 months, I called him. I told him, Ronnie, you should join us. Ronnie, look, man, like, believe in me, this is crazy. Amazing team, you should join us. So at the end of this 90 days, one day he called me at, he didn't call me at six, but he called me and he said that, Khan, you know what? You know, I'm coming there.
And then he moved to Berlin.
Yeah, he moved. Then he moved.
And how did you pay him? I mean, like the first 3 months that he like built your app for you from Beirut, how did you pay him?
Yeah. So when I decided that I'm going all in, I mean, N26 was giving me minus 8K in my account, and I was at minus 5K. And minus 2.5K, I paid for one very spectacular moment in my life. So I can get into this later. So I had essentially 500 euros. So when Ronnie told me, you know, like, these are the costs and we have this, these are the initial setup costs and, you know, it's more or less this much. It's, I mean, high five digits. I told him, no. 500 euros, man. 500 euros. I'm going all in. I'm going to make this product, you know, like I'm going to make this product like go crazy with a perfect team around it. You know, like we're going to live with this product. And then you're going to be proud that your platform as a service company will be well known in Europe. So this is how we do it. And we negotiated and, you know, like in Lebanon, you negotiate quite tough. So we said, okay, let's give it a try. And I, like, you know, I should appreciate that his trust and belief because like he had no reason to do it. And he did it. And I think it was a good decision.
So the first month you basically built a company with no money. I mean, you had your friend in Poland who gave you the first marketplace. Yeah. You had the guy in Lebanon who you gave 500 euros for the app.
Yeah.
And the merchant, I mean, the products you bought them on with your like credits on Index N26 at Rewe and Metro and then resold them in your neighborhood.
Not really, because I ran out of money after I talked to Ronnie because I gave you know, I gave everything to him. And then I said, okay, now we need to make this for real. You know, we need to rent a place. We need to get some products. So how can I do it? So, I mean, at that point, I called my mom. I still remember. So basically, I told her, Mom, you know what? I raised the money. I got the funds in. Finally, it's happening. But there's nothing, you know. Everyone says no every single day.
You achieved your mom a little bit.
Every single day, I get at least 10 to 20 no's at those times.
Oh, you were already pitching at the time.
I'm pre-revenue. I began pitching. Yeah.
And to VCs.
To angels most of the time. And I'm, you know, like I'm seeing like the reaction from the market. Man, everyone's laughing. Like, I mean, they're listening to me and they're laughing while they're listening, but in a teasing way. And I said, okay, so I need to get this money in. I need to get this running. I called my mom, told her, you know, Mom, I raised the money. I raised the money. This is going to be big. I'm doing this. But I need to pay the lawyers. You know, I need to pay the lawyers. Like, otherwise, I cannot get the money. And I think she understood that, you know, it's not that straightforward.
So,
but
so she gave you a couple thousand.
She gave me 4,000. And also my co-founder put 4,000. And so it's 8,000 euros, yeah. And we said, okay, now we rent the first place. We begin biking. We looked around. So we saw, we were about to share a 30-meter square place with a fashion designer. Then we said, no, man, like, this is going to go crazy. We cannot get this place. And we found a place at Danziger Straße.
Danziger Straße in Prenzlauer Berg.
Okay. Yeah, our first heaven. It's an amazing place. So we want to rent the place. Caution plus the first rent is more than 8,000 euros. What are we going to do? So they don't let me, they like the company doesn't have credit history. They want us like upfront payment. So my co-founder find a guarantor, you know, if something. So we tried to get a position that we don't pay caution and we just, you know, do the upfront payment. And yeah, so somehow we, you know, we talked to the guys and we said, okay, first month's rent, we pay monthly and we just pay the first month's rent.
But I mean, like after some pitching to angels, finally you found a business angel that believed in you.
Yeah, the first people who wouldn't laugh at us was Christoph Meyer. And
famous business angel in Berlin.
Yeah. We are still talking, you know, on a frequent basis. Actually, after here, I'm gonna go and meet him. I mean, he was spectacular, and I think he was asking, he was asking questions that's pushing me in the beginning. But he understood that I'm not joking. I mean, I see this. I see it. I see where it's going, and he believed in me. I'm very thankful for that.
I mean, he did invest a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it was a seven digit investment, a low level seven digit. Of course, there were a couple of angels also in the game, and then it just took it.
I mean, like before we get into the metrics, because I mean, at first glance, the model doesn't look very. Very interesting. I mean, you deliver like products from a supermarket to somebody's house very individually. So you ask like, how is this ever going to be profitable? You promise to be there in 10 minutes. So it looks like this is not a model that that can work. But before we get into this, like when did you switch to the name Gorillas and who had this genius idea? I mean, it's a fantastic name.
I love the name. So first of all, I was never confident with Get Goodies. Yeah. There were trademark issues. There were many things around this name. And also I wasn't super happy with it. You know, what's Get Goodies? So I was in my head, I was thinking, and asking some people in the creative domain, like, what do you think this kind of a business should be named? And they were all saying very similar things. Grocery is about trust. Grocery is about freshness. Grocery is about green and, you know, like it's about building this trust. I said, okay, it's about trust. It's about freshness. But is it only the name? It's not only the name, how you build trust and, you know, freshness. And if you look at the domain now, there's Rewe, Aldi, Bio Company, like there are many different names who have been with their visuals, with their, overall composure, owning this fresh and trust and other things around supermarkets. And if today, with a super bold model, if you try to own the same thing, first of all, you're going into a losing game. It's a losing battle there because, I mean, I trust these guys. And I wouldn't trust Gorillas in the beginning. So it's not about trust, basically. Actually, at that point, I begin thinking, okay, it's about values. It's about who we are. And then I begin thinking about, like, who are we? What are we doing? Is this a grocery company that delivers things in 10 minutes? Or is it a bunch of crazy people that get together and, try to rush packets from A to B? Not at all. So at our core, we are about four things. We are authentic people, taking bold decisions, owning the change and don't wait for the change, and always keep riding. So these four people, bold and authentic, is it Get Goodies? No, man, it's Gorillas, you know?
And so you had the idea. It was your name. You sat there and said, okay, I'm going to call it Gorillas. That was your brainchild.
Yeah, I mean, it was my brainchild. The hardest part was to convince people that it should be Gorillas. And at the end of the day, I didn't convince any, like,
and no. It's Gorillas because of the Go. I mean, there's GoPuff in the US, which is like a game, very similar game. And did you like want to have something with Go in the beginning, or like how did you find it?
No. I mean, not at all. I would say it's these kind of things they shaped later on. But we didn't think about, in the beginning, Get Goodies was something like that. That's okay. There should be goodies, like maybe Get, but Gorillas, it was just an outcome of the process, that this thought process that I just thought. It's bold, authentic. It can reflect our values. It can carry our values, and it's not grocery only. It's about doing things, unconventionally.
Okay. Okay. And so now the model. I mean, how does the model work, and why is this such a strong model? I mean, how many people do you have today? How many employees?
Today is a bit more than 800. It's getting close to 1,000. Yeah.
Okay. And how many warehouses do you have today?
Today?
Yeah.
I don't know if one is open now. Like we're launching one today. 11 warehouses is what we have today across three countries, across two countries.
So. And I mean, the plan for the next couple of weeks is to ramp it up to how many?
Yeah. So we are now fixing certain things. Like it looks like sunshine and rainbows, and it's not like that. So we fix some basics, and we're almost there. We're gonna have a new app design. We're gonna have like much cooler products. We have 50, 60 new locations coming up, and we have very cool campaigns. Like not campaigns, but actually community building projects, I would say. So we now prepare this, and the moment we prepare this, we're just gonna, in the Q1, we're gonna go and spread this to 50, 60 other locations.
Okay. So now explain the model a little bit. Why is it such a good model, and what do people don't see from the outside?
Man, model is simply beautiful. Like, it's simply beautiful. It's not because it's 10 minutes, by the way. It's not because, you know why it's beautiful? Because it's so primitive. The model is actually awakes this primitive emotions of people. So I tell you why. So can I tell you a little bit about, like, more detail, like what problem we solve, or do you really metrics or something? Okay. So if you look at grocery space, it's one of the two primitive needs of people, yeah? And so you need to stay somewhere, housing, and you need to eat things. And this is a super big need. And that's why also the market is super big. In Europe, it's 2.6 trillion. Globally, it's 11 trillion, blah, blah, blah. Like, but essentially, people buy things, people do groceries for three main reasons. So one is the emergency purchases. You know, you cook penne arrabbiata, you have the pasta in the water, you need the sauce. How can you get it? You need that sauce that moment, but how can you get it? Online delivery? No, I mean, there's minimum order value. You cannot, there are the delivery windows that I don't understand. So 1/3 of the market is underserved, this emergency purchases. 2/3 of the market is replenishments. So basically, this is the use case. You go to your kitchen, you open your fridge, you look inside of your fridge, and at that moment, you want to grab something from your fridge. And that moment, you realize that the thing that you want to grab from your fridge is not in your fridge. So you realize that, oh man, I want things to appear here. The need is super, super, super emergent, actually. But what do? You just close the fridge, you go to your living room. So 1/3, another 1/3 of the market is underserved. What we think is, the beauty of this model is not that 2/3 of the market is underserved, like Monday, team yoga. Yeah, it's not that. 2/3 of the market is underserved, but the bigger problem is the rest of this 1/3 of the market, weekly or bulk purchases, is super served. All of the solutions push people to order big amounts stock in the warehouse and as stock in their houses and, you know, carry all of these bags home. For me, it's super counterintuitive. Why? Yeah. So let's say that you and me, Philip and Khan, we go 20,000 years ago. Yeah. 20,000 years ago, we're in a cave. Yeah. And you get hungry. You get hungry and you want to go back in the cave and see if we have food, you know, just like you go to your fridge. You go there, you're very hungry, you check it out, there's no food. Yeah, there's no food. You're hungry, you know, you come in front of the cave and you say, Khan, there's no food. I don't know if you speak by them, but you draw it maybe. So there's no food in the cave. And I think there's no caveman ever existed that would give you this answer. Philip, don't worry. Wait for Saturday. We don't go hunting now. We wait 3-4 more days. We go for a bulk hunting with you, bulk gathering with you, and then we eat on Saturday. We do a bulk. Man, it's not in our genes to wait for the bulk
person. I understand the consumer proposition. I mean, I understand that people want like emergency purchases and that the desire for your service is there.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, there's the unit economics question. I mean, how can it ever work if somebody only orders an arrabbiata sauce?
Yeah.
That's like, what does it cost? Like an arrabbiata sauce, maybe like, I don't know, €4 or something?
Exactly.
And then how can you make money if you deliver this?
Yeah, perfect. So let me finish what I tell you, and then it's gonna connect to this question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what we believed is if one company pops up and serves these emergency purchases like arrabbiata or the replenishments, people would shift their share of wallet more and more from these big purchases to the middle ones. People wouldn't do big purchases but do smaller but like more frequent ones. And within these small purchases, there will be the arrabbiata sauce, but there will be also the replenishments, which is quite sizable. You know, arrabbiata sauce is €1.99 in our store, but replenishment is 50, 60 euros, sometimes more. Yeah. So the question is, where would it end up as average order value, coming to your question? And I think the answer of this question is this. Imagine you do everything bulkly. Imagine a scale. On one side of the scale, there's super bulk purchases. You buy everything that you need that month once. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll find mine. And on the other side of the scale, you buy everything alone. You buy the sauce alone. You buy the, water, one bottle of water.
One banana,
like everything. Mm-hmm. Buying everything I'll find mine in advance is not convenient. But also buying one by one is also not convenient. So there is somewhere in between, there's a sweet spot for convenience that will shape things, you know? So the question is, where is this point going to be?
So basically the question is, what's your average order value in the long term?
Yeah, in the long term, it's going to be over 30 euros for sure. I mean,
over 30 euros, you think? And you see it already? Is it already
yeah, it's, like? It's shaping towards that.
It's shaping towards that. So with 30 euro order value, you can be profitable. So your purchasing conditions are good enough. So you get enough margin from buying the products. So basically right now at Gorillas, the products cost the same as in the supermarket. You don't have you're not very expensive. For the customer, right?
Exactly. No. Because it's enough. It's enough. Like the model is more efficient. The model has, less in-store costs. The model has, less in-store costs. It's a very big one, actually. So we have less in-store costs, and this is reflected to prices. Also, we have less waste. That also is reflected to fresh prices.
Okay, but you have all the rider costs.
Yeah. I mean, so in Hamburg yesterday. So in yesterday in Hamburg, I did two rides in 30 minutes. So it's much less than my Berlin average. But I mean,
so if you ride yourself, you can do like five deliveries in an hour.
Yeah, in Berlin, I do 5 deliveries in an hour.
And is that like true for the most of your workers?
No, not at all. Because man, when I'm on my bike,
you
get it fast. Yeah.
But like, how much can your average delivery colleague do?
Yeah, I mean, this is sensitive, but I can tell you, this is like a bedroom info. So I mean, I'm happy to tell you, but what I can tell you is, it's gonna. So I can compare it with the food delivery a little bit for you. Yeah. So what happens in food delivery? First of all.
I mean, you mean restaurant delivery?
Restaurant delivery, yeah. Restaurant.
Lieferando.
Exactly.
And this stuff.
So there are three things, yeah. Your average order value, your take rate, and how many orders you do per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Let's begin with the average order value. I might be wrong with these numbers, maybe it developed, but when I was benchmarking I was using these numbers. So the average order value is around 16 to 20 euros
for meal.
For meal, yeah. So this is what I, and this is happening with a minimum order value. So on this average order value, you have 20 to 30% take rates, the commissions from the restaurants, and if you're lucky, in a complete day, you do somewhere between 1.8 to 2.2 rides per rider hour. And demand distribution is super off. You know, nothing happens. People get hungry during lunchtime, huge peak, nothing happens, or less thing happen. And after that, people get hungry again in the night. So take this one, and this one created a mission impossible for delivery companies, food delivery companies, and put some competition on top and increase the marketing cost, you burn like 10 to 15 euros per order. So this gave a so bitter taste to the, to the journalists, entrepreneurs, and, investors. And now there's a myth. No delivery company can make money cannot build a sustainable change in the domain. So what happened after that in food delivery? They wanted to say, okay, we need to somehow find another profit pools. And what can we do? We can do ghost kitchens. We can get into 30% profit pool, extra profit pool of the restaurants. And we look at the data, build the right restaurant at the right place, just optimized for delivery, and then we take this 30%. So then ghost kitchens appeared. The beauty of our model is we are ghost kitchens from the first day.
Ghost warehouses.
Ghost basically. Warehouses. Yeah. So we are not replicating something. If we would go and pick from the supermarket, then we would have done the same thing. But basically, we are not doing that. We own our own inventory. And this makes us.
So you're saying we have like compared to Lieferando and Delivery Hero, yeah, and those companies, you have a better average order value.
Yeah.
You have a higher frequency per hour.
Definitely.
You have no peak hours. Less peak hours. And you have better margins because you don't have the restaurant margin. You can buy directly from the producer. So you're saying you and we're talking about companies that are worth billions. I mean, Lieferando is worth billions, and Delivery Hero is worth billions.
Yeah.
So you're saying, like, basically, you found the better model, and compared to companies that are quite valuable.
I didn't find the model, but I may like, and we, but we are executing very well in my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't found the model. But we are doing something unique with the model.
And how many SKUs do you usually have? I mean, what do you think?
I mean,
how many products are you going to have in the warehouse?
We are now ramping it up. But it depends from market to market.
But I mean, in an average supermarket, in a Rewe market, there's probably like 20,000 products?
Yes. Depends on the format, but it's from 6,000 to 40,000. You know, like,
and then you're going to have then 2,000 to 3,000?
But in discounters, Lidl, for example, for a long time they had how many? 2,500 products max. But what I can tell you is what we tried to, let me not give you some numbers because these numbers are
confidential.
Not confidential,
but they're changing.
It's changing constantly. I mean, today, for example, there's a big change in number of SKUs. So, but anyways, we look at a couple of things. So, in London, for example, average person buys 220 different products.
In a year,
220 different products from a supermarket. In supermarkets with 60,000 products, yeah. But no two people
buys the same
2020. So what we try to do here is, how can we create the 5% of this? Well, how can we select this 5% of the world in terms of goods so that we, A, promote living more with less, yeah, more convenience with less consumption, like less amount of consumption, and B, is create a super efficient model. So this is basically what we try to do with our assortment, and we ramp this number up until we cover the essential needs.
There's rumors in the market that it is possible for you to like have like a more than 100 million in revenue in 2021. Is that possible?
Definitely.
Yes.
But you mean monthly?
No, I mean yearly. I mean,
so you mean December or you mean the whole 2000?
I mean 2021, this year. Like, you think you can crack 100 million revenue already?
I mean, definitely yearly.
Okay, so you already.
But it's not a revenue game. It's a margin game. So it's not a business that has 30%. So like revenue is a misleading metric here, because revenue grows much faster than probably you imagine. So the key thing is there a clear road to profitability? One question, and second is of course, how you create a community, you know, how you create a community that's building this with you in terms of, I mean, consumers.
But is it focused on big cities only? Can it only happen in Hamburg and Berlin and Cologne? Or can, I mean, Flash and Post, they started in Münster, for instance, small city.
Yeah.
Do you see a business also happening in Münster or a similar city?
So we are analyzing it. We have a big data tool that shows this, and like we identified. Many locations on small cities, but we are not. First, we want to cover the big cities, because as we cover the big cities, we're learning every single day. We are still in this process of learning and optimizing the model, and when optimized model will work in smaller cities.
Okay. So you're thinking small cities can at some point also be on the roadmap.
Yes. I mean, at some point, yes.
Okay, and you're active right now in Germany. Which cities are you working?
So, at the end of Q1, we will cover the most dense seven cities in Germany.
But in the end, I mean, do you think about a city or do you think about a neighborhood? I mean, I know that in Hamburg, we talked about this before the podcast. Mm. You have three different warehouses to serve, like in Hamburg, the Schanze and Winterhude and Altona, right? So it's like you're thinking neighborhoods.
I'm thinking neighborhoods, and like I would say, like 80% of the inner city population will be covered. Let's put it this way:
80% of the inner city population. Yeah. And how, okay, right now you have 11 warehouses.
Yeah,
and that's one is in Cologne, couple is in Berlin, couple are in Hamburg.
Three Cologne, one Hamburg, six, seven. I don't know if you're live yet with it, but seven. Let's say seven in Berlin. It's already 11, and we have now one in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm. And why Amsterdam?
Huh?
Why Amsterdam?
I mean, I love Amsterdam. but I'm not kidding. I mean, we as a company, like, we really believe doing businesses in places that we love. And I don't know if it's a coincidence, but data always tells a similar result. So,
what did you look at? I mean, what do you look at when you open a city?
I mean, so first of all, I go there personally and bike. Yeah, so I go there personally, bike. You know, look at the people, talk to people, and then take an Airbnb. You know, like take an Airbnb in the district that I want to open, and we want to open, and then order some groceries with the current methods. You know, then you understand more or less what's happening. Then you understand that you need to stay in, either you have a good option or not. So in Amsterdam, you know why I think the biggest penetration thing will be? The stairs, man. The stairs, man, they're so narrow. They're so narrow. Like, It feels like climbing, you know. It's like a temple in Mexico, you know they have these temples. So it's so narrow and so steep. I think this is so you understand these kind of small details when you live it.
Can you notice like that most of your customers live like in higher?
Yeah. Exactly.
Is it true? I mean,
yeah. Fourth, fifth floor. Because it's extra value. If you're in the first floor, you want to go. You know? But if you're in the fourth, fifth floor, you want to get. So this is, I think, the difference.
And in Amsterdam, many people live up, like high up?
No, but they have stairs, you know, Man,
but I mean, stairs are super ugly. Give me the metrics. Like, I mean, okay. I understand this. This is very anecdotal and very interesting. Yeah, I mean,
I give you the metrics.
But I'm sure you're like also looking at like.
Yeah, I know. I know. We have a big data tool that tells us open there. Yeah.
So. But based on what?
Yeah. So many things, man. Many things. So population density, early adopter rate, discounter penetration, supermarket penetration. You know, like we have third wave, coffee shop penetration, scooter penetration. We have many things, and food delivery penetration, but not. I mean, interestingly, not always we use it as a correlation. For example, food delivery penetration and, for example, Berlin. I mean, we chose Berlin because there's inverse correlation between food delivery and food. We believe there's inverse correlation between food delivery penetration and.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I formulated in the wrong way, but what I think is, let's say that we do this in Berlin, yeah? We do this in Berlin, and in Berlin, we don't have the most advanced food delivery system, you know, like, or convenience culture. So that's why if you want to eat something, you need to wait a little bit. Now Wolt is slowly changing that. But it's not really well covered compared to other capitals. And in supermarkets also, there's no good solution. There's no Ocado, there's no, you know, solution that directly brings it to you. So that's why what we do here is perceived, the incremental value of what we do here perceived as super high. What I mean by that is it feels like getting a solution from 90s to 2030. And this creates like wow, like it's a wow effect. But well, which creates a good viral effect around the business. But if you go to London, for example, yeah, Amsterdam is also one of the landscapes like this. So the digital solutions are so advanced, you know, like are so convenient that the incremental value that you bring is not from 90s to 2030s, but it's more like 20s to 30s.
In Amsterdam or like where?
In Amsterdam, yeah. Mm-hmm. So in my point of view, then you just say, okay, 10 minutes delivery, it's good. It's another solution. You know, it's not like, wow, man, that's 10 minutes.
So you're like, saying the wow effect is bigger in Berlin than in Amsterdam?
It's going to be like that in my point of view. It's going to be like that in markets that has lower levels of this is just a hypothesis. It might be completely wrong.
But so you're saying like most German cities are like in the 90s in terms of food delivery, and like foreign or like international cities, some of them are already like more advanced. You have more convenience there, and so Gorillas is not going to make such a big difference.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's 90s, but especially after the delivery wars, you know, like it wasn't like that for 2 years ago because there were like Deliveroo, Foodora, you know, Lieferando. But then once they get out. There was a big gap of convenience. For a long time, there was only Lieferando there, and compared to other capitals, this was one of the only capitals that I've been, and I see only, you know, one player taking the market. In an,
how many customers do you have? like roughly?
Yeah. What I can say is. In our delivery, so we don't. Let me not tell you the numbers exactly, but.
But it's more than 50,000.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
Yeah, more than that.
Is it already six digit?
It's getting there. It's gonna be there. Like once we open. First of all, not customers. So I want to tell this. You know, like we are super into metrics, but. We don't really treat this okay. Customers, CRM, discount code, like it's like more. It's like we don't do that. So at the moment, what we do is, and we don't care so much about number of customers, Philip. So what we care about is
repurchasing.
A couple of things. Not repurchasing. Like this is one metric we do, but what we would try to do is. We believe that if you're going to the moon, yeah, you shouldn't go to the supermarket, man. If you have this technology, you should have a more techy approach to do this. You know, you can go to the moon, man. Like, imagine this. We go to the space. This is something, this is for me something, you know.
Incredible.
Something incredible. But if we have this technology, why my most primitive need doesn't come to my home, you know? So this is a significant change. So this is not something incremental in my point of view, because this there are huge industries around this most primitive need, and to move this, we need values. We need values and a community that shares these values. And we need to share these values to the community. And that's why number of customers is a misleading metric. Number of, like, size of the community. And community meaning that number of people that we went to their doors and explained our vision, explained what we tried to change, explained who we are, is the real metric. And that's coming, that comes with retention. That comes with, exactly like you said, retention. How, like, what that, I mean, of course, there's service levels attached to it, but retention is also about, you know, like, if you have buy into the vision of the company. So
how do you advertise? I mean, first customers, you gained them because they were your neighbors and you threw the flyers into their mailboxes. And today, I mean, is it like all word of mouth? I mean, I see that you do some like app store advertising, but how do you advertise?
I mean, we have a fancy name for it inside. We call it viral growth loop design.
Viral growth loop design.
Yeah. Okay. So this basically is something that we begin exploring and thinking about because we began in full constraints. Yeah. And what I mean by that is we had zero budget for marketing for a long time. And we said, okay, I mean, how can we design free touch points that will take our values and reflect to what we do? And so this is the approach we do. And touch point, what I mean is, like, every touch point that we have the customer, we have with the customer can be a different channel. It can be Facebook, it can be YouTube, it can be, you know, a postcard, it can be our bike crew on the street, you know, many touch points. So we design this wild growth loop. How do we do it? We do three things. We give our community, first of all, we give our community something they have to talk about, something that they would be super amazed. I mean, there's no way that you don't talk about it. Yeah, it's one thing. Second thing is we tell them how it's best for us, for them to talk about it. And then third one, we talk about it. So just to give an example, I don't think 10-minute delivery is worth to talk. I mean, you can talk about it, but
10 minutes is not impressive enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's impressive. It's impressive, but 2-minute delivery is more impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 minutes, you order 2 minutes, bam.
Yeah.
You have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How can you create, so viral growth loop has 2-minute delivery, for example.
But how is it possible? I mean, you can't be in 2 minutes at somebody's door.
You can be. Upstairs, you can do.
How?
Upstairs of the warehouse, you can do.
Okay.
So you know this concept of don't have 1,000 customers, don't have 100,000 customers that love you, but have like that. Don't have 100,000 customers, but have 100 people community that really loves you. This is what we believe is we are proud of building, and that's the base of why things are going viral. And the fundamentals of this reality is these three things. 2 minutes delivery. I tell 2-3 minutes.
And so it's not classic advertising, but so at some point, will there be like people like riding the bikes in costumes, or will there be like gorillas costumes, or what is it going to be like?
I ride myself sometimes with costumes, and I sometimes walk in costumes.
But can you scale that? I mean, you can't scale that.
I can scale it, and I don't want to scale that because because what I realized is some babies are getting scared. Man, you know, I walk sometimes, you know, like I'm super happy inside of the costume, but babies scared. We're not doing it. I mean, it's super viral. Like people like it, but we will stop it because babies scare. I don't like that.
Okay, so the even faster delivery times than 10 minutes is impressive. What else is impressive?
Man, values. Sticking to values is impressive. Authenticity is impressive.
So you don't sell cigarettes. Is that also like because of your values?
Yeah. I mean, this is more of a technical thing than our values. So our values is four things, and so I repeat this over and over again. But tell me if I repeat too much, because my job, what I do now is I repeat these values, man. I repeat it at all time, all parts of like all my teammates, you know. So authentic people, we are authentic people. We take bold decisions. We always own the change and always keep.
But how, I mean, how are you going to bring it to the next level? I mean, I understand I know you, so I can totally trust that you have these values. But how, I mean, if you hire a rider, in the end, he has to like also carry that, and also you have to scale. I mean, it's, how can you get this into Amsterdam and make it a business?
You mean the values?
Yeah.
Yeah, super easy. So, because it's a priority. Yeah, so because it's a priority, I save time on this because, I mean, first of all, it begins from me. Yeah, in the fundraising part, one of our, coming to your marketing question, 25% of the traffic is generated by flashy colors, you know? Flashy colors on the branding, you know, like you have pink, you have, you know, orange, you have the... I'm not comfortable in these colors. And in my vision is to change how riding is perceived. I lived on my bike 6 months, yeah? And I want to change how riding is perceived. How can you do this? Two things. You have a legal base and a comfortable legal and financial base for our bike crew. And you make them proud on the bike. So then it's not a gig. They don't take the back from A to B, but they're on a vision to change how riding is perceived. So within this vision, when we had zero money, we were raising funds, and one of the investors came in and you need to have a flashy color, you need to have like billboards.
Like it's just like the fedora and delivery.
They have cool colors, but I mean you can do it in a cool way, but you have to have flash cut. We didn't have you know money to invest in at this moment. I said, look, man, we can grow slower. We can grow slower. We don't care. But my bike crew will be proud on their bikes, and I'm not proud when I have the flashy color. So I like all black. I want to have the nicest equipment, you know. Like
I mean, the Gorillaz logo looks like the Supreme logo almost.
Yeah, yeah. Like I want to be proud. I don't want. I'm not some. My bike crew is not a bike crew. That's a billboard. We are not billboards, man. If we grow less, we grow less. I mean, and if you don't want to invest because it's don't fucking invest in me, you know. So this is basically how we had 100 euros in the bank account while I'm saying this, and it was like, you know. Coming to your question. So how can you scale this to Amsterdam? How can you scale this to other countries? We religiously give the meaning why we exist, and I tell you how you can exist. There's only way to scale this is to really understand what's the purpose of the business, and is our purpose groceries? Is our purpose 10 minutes deliveries? It's not. This the scaling of it, like this vibrant momentum around the business, is not about we deliver in 10 minutes or we deliver in 15 minutes or 7 minutes. It's about a company popped out, and with these four values, we created a magnetic connection with our community. Not because we delivered the groceries, because we inspired this community to interact with the world differently. They don't ask, oh, how fast is this? They ask you, how did you do it? You know, they're inspired because like they realized there was so primitive need that they have, and we showed them. So this is how we scale it.
Let me just come back with a very technical marketing question.
Like, ask me.
Like the percentage of your marketing expenses, is that like 5% or like 2% or 10% of your revenue? Like, what do you see? What do you expect there?
Let me tell you the right answer. It's around 1.5%.
1.5% is only paid marketing. So it's not very important.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's viral is important.
Huh?
Viral is much more important than paid marketing.
Yeah.
And then maybe back to the model. I mean, what you see with Flash and Post and others is that they, I think, long term will make money by charging the producers of those of their products to be like in a very special place in the app. So you basically have a media model where, like Amazon, your companies that you deliver, they can pay for very good location or very good. Presentation in your app, and then you get like media intake, media revenues that are very profitable. Is that already happening?
That was gonna happen, but we didn't want it to happen because like it was a very big corporation and we didn't know if it was the right thing to do because,
So you got approached by like a big supermarket,
CPG company. Yeah.
A CPG company, and they want to like give you money so that you present their products in a better place in the app.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't believe in that?
I mean, they wanted us to display it in Gorillaz Fave, man. Gorillaz Fave is not packaged product. It's
Gorillaz Faves is like a certain tab in the app where you have products that you like personally. you or your team?
Not me. But you know, this is just bananas for us. You know, we are gorillas, and you know what we like is bananas. So that's why in Gorillaz Fave we have bananas.
And they want their product to be there as well.
Yeah, man. But
do you see this business happening at some point?
I see it happening, but it should happen our way. I mean, just because a couple of cents, we don't do it.
Okay, so somebody has to spend big and then he'll be like in a nice place in the app.
No. Just because a couple of cents, we wouldn't change our faves.
Okay.
But you can
do other things. You can like, if somebody clicks on beverages, you can be the first beverage or you can be the 10th.
Yeah. We're going to do it and we're going to do it the right way. We're not going to do it in a way that we put something to our gorilla's face if it's not our fave.
Okay. But what's the most purchased product?
Guess what? Bananas.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, bananas. But bananas is amazing, you know?
But I mean, it's not an emergency product. I mean, who's like cooking and eats a banana?
Man, banana is something amazing. It's like, imagine this. Tell me one other fruit that's so tasty and you can access so easily. You bite it.
But you're not lying. I mean, seriously, banana is the most bought product.
Yes, it is.
And what's the second?
But every time you buy a banana, you don't buy one. So you buy multiple and you buy units. So maybe if you divide it into units, it's different. But banana is the biggest one.
And the second one?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know if I should tell this, but but it's about fruits and veggies, man.
The single most important category is fruits and veggies.
I mean, it's important category
because it's fresh stuff.
It's fresh stuff.
I mean, obviously, fresh stuff is what you need within 10 minutes. I mean, the other stuff you can usually wait.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about like why fresh stuff are selling a bit more than the fair share in supermarket maybe. So. Basically, one question, how can you buy blueberries on Saturday and still eat on Wednesday? It's almost impossible. It goes moldy. It goes non-fresh. So this, like gorillas, what we do is we help people to, you know, access fresh items. And consume them when they're fresh. So this is super beautiful part of the model. And that's why we see a lot of fresh consumption or low shelf life consumption in the model. And if you think about this, Philip, this is the consumer side. What do you do as a CPG company, you know, like a big packaged goods company to survive in a, in the current structure of the retail. So basically, what you do is you maximize your shelf life. And how you maximize your shelf life? You take something, you put in a plastic bag, you put some chemicals inside, and you make something natural, something, you know, unnatural. And if this, not if, but when we penetrate, when we get more and more, when we increase our community, we will not only build this around the consumer. We will also change the food industry around it. Like this is like our grand vision. So we really see. I mean, decreasing the number of food industry is broken. Documentaries in Netflix or something. You know, it's totally doable with this model. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful model.
And I mean, grand plans. I mean, changing the food industry for the better. Obviously, I mean, you're delivering by bike. There's so many aspects. And you have less waste, right? And I mean, now that there's like big time investors believing in this. Like a couple of weeks ago, it came out that you had a 44 million invested in the company by American company.
Yeah, Couture. Couture.
And so if they gave you 44 million to expand. So usually, like when you have that, it's not a big mystery. Your company is already worth like 200 million now. I mean, that's usually how it works. I mean, everybody knows that. I mean, you get 44 million, you don't give away the whole company. So usually, give away like 20%. So you're already at this point, right? I mean, it's amazing after like like 16 months from zero to like possibly 200 million.
I mean, first of all, Couture led the round. Yeah, so it's just to correct. They led the round, not the whole amount is
from them
coming from Couture, and we are very lucky to partner with them. I mean, they are not only providing capital, also a lot of good connections, and many more. Also, brand power extension.
How did you find them? Through angels or through your?
Shoko.
Yeah. Yeah, the also like very interesting new Daniel, startup in Berlin.
Shoko CEO Daniel introduced me.
Okay. And is that going to be the is there a new round coming in 2021? You think?
I mean,
it could be. I mean, you're not gonna change the food industry with only 44 million in the bank. You probably need more.
I mean. The question is how can you change it? And for change is you need capital in the beginning. And at the moment we need capital, we have access to capital.
So but I mean, if I like spin this further, it could be a story where you're like from founding the company and then 2 years later, could you be a unicorn by then? Like a billion-dollar company? I mean, in the next funding round, you're not going to be at 200 million. You're probably going to ask for like a valuation of 500, 600 million at least, I would say.
Yeah, Philip, it might sound cheesy, but I have no connection with the size of the business or like the valuation or like, you know, like it's... At the end of the day, it's all about change, all about the change. And if the change requires money, we dilute as a company. If the change doesn't require money, we don't raise money. So the key thing is why we're doing it and how much capital we need for it and do we have access to it. So we know why we do it, we know how much we require, and we have access to capital. And so you become a unicorn. You don't become a unicorn. It's going to be much, much earlier than 24 months. It's like this model is like if we keep on doing how we do things and stick to our values as a company, and as you mentioned, if we can preserve this at this pace of growth, then basically capital is not the bottleneck. We just spread this.
So you're saying then you'd be a unicorn like in less than 24 months?
I mean. If we stick to our values, it's a matter of it's not a matter of years, it's a matter of months.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of clones now popping up. Everybody's seen like what you built there. Like the digital industry is very transparent. People like look at where money goes and how many other like delivery or like express delivery mm-hmm. companies are in Germany like popping up right now. How many exist? What do you guess?
I mean, I don't want to tell the number in Germany, but I can tell you a total number of London, Germany, and Paris. So there are 12 different teams working on this, and 12 good teams working on this. And it's gonna be a competitive market for sure. It's gonna be a competitive market. What I don't like is some of these teams, yeah, not all, some of these teams, they do one-to-one. You know? I mean, delivery area, one-to-one. Go to the real estate guy. Tell them we are Gorillas clone. One to one. Like, I mean, this is like some of these people also not with Gorillas, also with GoPuff. There's also one player now. There's exactly Go, like, you know, maybe it's even GoPuff. I don't know. Like, it's so similar. So what I don't like is the beauty of the domain can be damaged by this. Not by authentic people trying to do this. Like, I'm super, like, I love it. I love a good team, you know, like doing something witty, you know, like challenging. I love that. I want to be in that kind of a setup. But, I mean, come on. I mean, have some values and reflect it to what you do. Because why I say this, man, Europe is an amazing place. Especially coming from, you know, Turkey, like, we love our country, but we look at the know-how and the accumulation of knowledge in this continent, yeah? So there's a lot of good entrepreneurs, there's a lot of, you know, like, good works, art, love it, yeah? But as in this setup, there's also a lot of cloning happening. Like in a setup where you have this amazing thing.
And so you're saying if those clone people don't have the same passion as you, they might ruin the whole domain.
What I say is, I think this is what's going to happen. For example, what happened in retail industry? Like we're gonna repeat the history, I think, with this model, with this cloning. And I don't like that's why I want to scale as long as we're proud, you know, of what we're doing. So what happened in retail? Grocery retail. First, there were small kiosks, milkman, you know, bakery, and at some point, they begin getting together and they increase their assortment in these local shops, and these local shops became more expensive to be in the local place, and also they needed more space. So that's why there are hypermarkets and supermarkets being emerged outside of the city. So people were going there as an experience, you know, like we take the families, Saturday we go. As time goes, people began living much more fast-paced and time became the scarce resource. And then, like, less and less the number of people that's going outside of the city decreased. And that's why the grocery companies decrease the format and open small mini formats within the city. And during this time, what happened is, if there's one supermarket next door, next corner, you have the other supermarket. And at some point, everything became equal in these markets. And what happened? Price war began. So what happened is, we basically lost this touch and we began competing. And competition is healthy. I like competition, you know. I'm national level water polo player. I cry when I'm the water, and, you know, when I'm winning and losing, you know. I'm I love, if there's one someone to compete, I'm the one who wants to compete. But if it's for the sake of what? I mean, if it's a constructive competition that takes the level up, it's okay. But I mean, the approach of they make money, we don't, let's clone. I mean, I think Europe deserves better than this. Coming from looking Europe as an idle continent, I think I came here with a different perspective, to be honest. Mm. And this is, I'm not gonna let this happen, man. I'm not gonna let this domain to be dirty. I love this so much, and my team loves this so much. It's not about me. It's like this young, ambitious, and authentic people, like constantly pushing for bold decisions, always riding, you know, being a one team. Like these people, they deserve to spread this change in a non-destructive way. And that's why, coming to your question, this can be a unicorn. I don't care about the unicorn, but I feel responsible for my team to don't spend so much time with competition. We just win and move forward. So because we have a lot of things to do around our vision, and we want to do this, we want to apply this vision in a very clean way, in a very transformative way, in a very mindful and respectful way. So yeah, we want to change. We want to create a healthy community.
Okay. It's an amazing story. I mean, no matter the valuation, no matter the exact revenue right now, but I mean, you've like within a couple of months, you've like transformed your own life. Now you're like a founder that VCs want to talk to, private equity companies want to approach. I'm assuming like you get like inbound interest all the time. People like, I want to invest in you. And, a couple of months ago, you were like walking around in Berlin and cutting your own flyers and and I mean, sometimes it feels like a dream for you, probably, right?
To be honest, I still feel like I'm cutting my flyers. I mean, it's not like a dream. So, for example, now that I talk to you now, it feels weird. I mean, it feels weird. I want to go back to my, our warehouse and talk to Anton. You know, last time I saw him, it was September, and he came here and built an amazing team. You know, like he just graduated last year. I want to congratulate him and, you know, like do a couple of rides with him. So at the moment, we are too far away from talking about being in a dream state. We are executing all in, and we don't feel like we established something. So only thing that we're proud of, two things. We establish a really good team, super connected with, you know, cohesive team. And we have a really good community. We have a really good community of
customers. What's your target? I mean, how old is your average buyer?
Our average buyer?
Yeah.
Now it changed a lot. Now the spread went to 55 to 60s. But in the beginning, there was an early adopter, classic early adopter age range, 25 to 35.
Okay, so but now it's like elderly people that use it.
Yeah. Now, not elderly, but, you know, like it's... Man, come on, we're 55. You shouldn't say elderly.
Okay, and do you feel like the classic supermarkets are going to be a threat to you as well? I mean, the clones are there. Mm-hmm. Then obviously, Flush and Post has a different model, and Picnic. Those guys were on the podcast. They have different models. It takes like different delivery windows, like days later. So it's different right now, at least. You feel like Rewe online and those guys threatening you?
I mean, they're solving a different problem. So I think they are solving a different problem. So that's why I don't see them as a threat. Because as I told you, you're in a cave. You know, you're in a cave and there's no food in the back in the cave. And, you know, we immediately go for hunting together, Philip. And they just say that, okay, wait, we go Saturday. So I don't believe that this is a threat. Mm-hmm. But what I think is a threat is this model is so beautiful that, you know, like people will underestimate and will try to inject capital into this. And well, the moment they inject, they will, like, the industry might go into a very wrong, very wrong side. They will try to buy people, not create the community.
Is it possible? If, I mean, I know you a little bit now. We talked a couple hours before the podcast, or almost. You have access to so many cell phones now, and it's growing. I mean, you have, like, I don't know, 100,000 cell phones that have a Gorillaz app now, maybe more. And it's certainly more in the coming month and years. And you say it's not about groceries necessarily. I mean, can you imagine, like, using this reach and using this community, as you call it, to sell and deliver something completely away from groceries?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I tell you how we think, and you know, and then you can cut after the podcast if you want, if it's too detailed. So, because once I want to tell this, and so that everything sticks, yeah. As I said, these four things that I mentioned, the four values, yeah, gives us a purpose that we want to change how the world interacts with their essential needs. Yeah, like, we just want to change this. And what we believe is, the moment we give immediate access to the essential needs of people, they will begin consuming more mindfully and respectfully. This is just this example of, you know, if, like, the billionaires don't have this, you know, like, you know, golden suits and stuff, you know. So they because once you get rid of the scarcity in your life, you're more mindful, because you know you can access, and you access more mindfully. So to do this, our mission is to create the fastest infrastructure that gives people the essential needs, and a community to spread this. So around this, around essential needs, what are essential needs? Grocery is one of the essential needs. Yeah, peace of mind is, for us, is an essential need. So, for example, peace of mind, grocery we're covering. Peace of mind, how do I get my peace of mind? Sometimes I think about it. I do meditation. So sometimes it works, sometimes I get, you know, I get distracted, but I do meditation, I do sports, I educate myself, I read. So these are, for us, these are essential needs. So around this spectrum, coming to your question, once we have many, you know, many phone, like many phones or access to the pockets, I think we shouldn't think about, like, just going to the physical and physical space that can make us additional physical revenue. But we should also think about, for example, how can we give this peace of mind? Can we give a 10-minute meditation?
Through the Gorillaz app, maybe.
Yeah, through the Gorillaz app. Yeah. Okay. We have many ideas. When we have many ideas around this.
So the Gorillaz app at some point will definitely be more than just a food delivery app.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the financial decision is go to apotheke, you know, go OTC medication. This is the financial decision where it should go.
To expand your market to apotheke. Yeah.
Coming to your, because when you look at the surveys, it says that I don't do that. There's a survey from McKinsey. It says, I don't do that because of long delivery times. They don't do online shopping because of long delivery times. 27% groceries, 26% apotheke or medication, pharmacy, and the rest is 8-9%.
So you have to conquer this market as well.
I mean, the ideal, so ideal, you know, ideal path is that one. But as I said, is this our values? We are around, like, is this our values? So maybe there's a better solution for us. Maybe for us, meditation is a better solution than apotheke.
Okay, Khan, that was many, many different storylines, very interesting situation. Like, we definitely want to follow your story in the next month and years, and it's I'm sure you'll like create more waves in the industry here in Germany and maybe in Europe. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, Philip, thank you very much for inviting me, man. Like, it was a super nice room with a super nice vibe that you created. I really thank you for you know calling me. I quite enjoyed it. And one thing before we close, maybe I just want to send one thank you. Yeah. Like 9 months ago, actually, I was listening to your podcast. So it's not that, you know, like I was listening and I was saying, okay, like one day, you know, I'm going to talk about the vision and what we're doing and everything. And I think if I'm doing this now, it's purely about this, the two things, you know, the team that's super united and the community that supports our vision. So I want to take, and also like the you know, like the combination of both, I want to thank both for my internal team, and I don't want to say external team, but also the external community. I'm super thankful, man. Like, we're gonna change this together for sure. I'm super pumped up for this. I love awesome, it man. I love awesome.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, man. Bye bye.